Well, good afternoon. I'm Michael Popelka. I'm working on a PhD in the Dr. Tynstra's lab at Purdue University, and my title is going to be on analysis of stagrine and abiotic stress tolerance in maize. Our objective is really we wanted to evaluate several different maize inbreds across the germplasm, both XPVP germplasm and also some of the diversity panel, as well as some other inbreds that we had communication with other professors that they thought might be more drought tolerant. And once we went through that, we narrowed it down to an inbred line called Mo20W. And we wanted to figure out what were the genetic causes of that stagrine, the mechanisms involved. And then finally, we wanted to utilize the NAM from Ed Buckler's group, Cornell, more narrowly the NAM test crosses that he has created, and use joint QTL mapping to locate a few QTL in those populations. I first want to talk a little bit about stagrine. A lot of people talk about it, but I don't think anybody's mentioned what exactly it is. Under inbreds with similar relative maturity and flowering dates, stagrine is the capability, visual stagrine, capability of staying green longer past flowering time. But in the publication by Thomas and Howarth, Five Ways of Stagrine, they also talk about a functional stagrine. Functional stagrine is not only to stay green, but the ability to continue photosynthesis later after during grain fill. And this is across all sorts of different species and different crops. So the first experiment we looked at is we're measuring stagrine in several different lines, and this is just a snippet of that data. In these two graphs here, you can see the graph on the left. We have historic inbreds B73 Mo17, and in this top line with the black circle is Mo20W. Mo20W is from the Missouri program. It's a white corn. I'll show a picture of it later. It wasn't used very much in pedigree development later on. And so this is a historically lost inbred that may have some interesting stagrine that's not involved with today's current germplasm. So on the left, we see the visual stagrine, and we can see that at 14 to 15 weeks, even into 17 weeks after planting, Mo20W continues to stay green in the chlorophyll content. We're using a SPAD to measure that on the leaf above the ear leaf. We also used dark adapted fluorescence, chlorophyll fluorescence, as a measurement of functional stagrine, and see that how healthy are the potential of the photosystem II during that period. And again, we see in Mo20W that it stays steady for longer into the grain fill period than both Mo17 and B73. So going into that, we wanted to say, what do we see in hybrids? So we use an XPVP line, LH82. Which is rather senescent compared to some of the other ones that have come off. And we crossed both B73 Mo17 to this line, as well as Mo20W. And you can see in this graph, this is the dark adapted chlorophyll fluorescence. In 130 days after planting, we still see a higher level of dark adapted fluorescence. So we think that functional stagrine can also be moved into the hybrids. Here's just a picture. On your right, you'll see Mo20W. This is at reproductive maturity, black layer, and you can see that it's very, very green in the field still. Everything around it, even in the background, you see is everything is senesced and is dead at this point. But you also can see some of the characteristics that aren't so pleasant about it. It's short, it's stubby, it's just not a very pretty line. Also want to pay attention to the same picture is after reproductive maturity. We start to see purpling in the stem, which suggests that after black layer, it's still producing photosynthase, and the sugar accumulations in the stems is causing it to purple. So another indication is functional stagrine. So we wanted to do a couple QTL studies with two populations. We took it to an advanced back cross too. Real populations with B73 Mo17 as the recurrent parent. We made 396 inbreds in each population. And the reason we wanted to go to a back cross two is we wanted to move it into similar plants under similar architecture as the B73 and Mo17 and see if we can still see the stagrine. Of course, this reduces our chance of, if it's polygenic trait, of having our several combinations of genes, but it looks like we're okay when we look at when we start to analyze the data from those. We measured it in three environments, two in Garden City, and one in Guayana, Puerto Rico, which is south side of Puerto Rico. Two great years for measuring drought tolerance in those areas, as many of you probably know. We did have one in West Lafayette to see the effects under a well-watered, but it's amazing what 70-mile-per-hour winds and golf ball-sized hail will do to a stay-green project. We used an augmented design and then replicated the checks within that augmented design in order to decrease the amount of time between measurements and we get a more accurate measurement. And then our two measurements were at 1,000 growing degree days post-flowering, and that was for greenness and then quantum yield of photosystem 2 or yield fluorescence, chlorophyll fluorescence. Looking at the weather data from Garden City, Kansas, we can see that during the month of July, we were at a period of 100 degrees Fahrenheit or about around 38 degrees Celsius for the entire month. And water conditions, this is the combination of both rain-fed and limited irrigation. And this is at the Pioneer limited irrigation plots there in Garden City. So we went on limited irrigation until July, and then we shut off all irrigation and allowed the crop to dry out. And that's why you see the small precipitations at the end of the year in August and September. Just two visual pictures of what those populations look like in the field. As you can see on the left, this is for the B73 population. We have two plants under similar leaf architecture and basically whole plant above ground architecture. But you can see the differences just in the visual staggering between the two lines. The same on the right with the MOS-17 population, although these architectures are a little different. When we look at a histogram of the data, we can see it has a lot of variation for greenness and both quantum yield photosystem 2 within the field, and this is significant across entries. And it's also good to point out that MO20W and B73 are toward the tails, so MO20W probably is contributing most of the staggering to these populations. Also important to show is the correlation between that quantum yield of photosystem 2 and greenness. It does show a decent correlation, which suggests that visual staggering is related to functional staggering and that this isn't a chlorophyll catabolism mutant that can cause the visual but no photosynthesis being produced. So after we phenotyped, we were thinking about ways to genotype this population. We decided to go with the May SNP 50 bead chip. It's 56,000 SNPs at every entry that you test. Our parents that we put both parents on there and then the F1 between those parents so we could get a measure of which markers were polymorphic. We also did a selective genotyping where we took the 19 top ranked for staggering and functional staggering and the bottom ranked and compare it between those two. And then we also did a comparison of bulks, two random individual bulks. We conducted single marker analysis, and once we went through quality control and excluding monomorphic markers, we got down to 13,864 SNP markers across the genome. We wanted to do just simple single marker analysis, so we did an F-test with genotypes being our independent variable and greenness being our dependent variable. And we wanted to reduce our type 1 error, so we used alpha significant p-values less than 0.01. We also know that there's many independent tests involved with going across the genome, 13,864 to be more correct. And so we wanted to use the permutation test, which is possible now in SAS 9.2 with PROC multitest. So we can do a permutation test for each individual marker. This graph, really quickly, we'll go over it. The x-axis is the genomic position of each SNP across the maize genome. On the y-axis, you'll see the negative log p-value of that F-test for the genotypes at that SNP locus. The blue bar is at 2, which is alpha of 0.01. And the black line you see is a moving average of 20 markers at a time across the genome. And from this, we deduce that there's at least four loci involved or QTL involved with staggering at this point in time. And those are located on chromosome 3, 4, 8 and 10. Of course, this is looking at only 19 individuals in each bulk, and we realize that we can reduce some of that noise, so we're going to go ahead and do 48 more lines in the B-73 MO-20W population, 24 per tail, and we'll also look at 94 lines in the MO-17 and MO-20W population and see if we see the similar results within between those two. We're also wanting to know a little bit more about staggering as far as the physiology involved. So we've teamed up with Pioneer, and we're doing a metabolite analysis of those genotype lines from the tails. And, of course, nothing really matters in the inbred unless you can prove it in the hybrid. And so we're also looking at an analysis of those test crosses from the phenotypic tails. And I didn't have the data to present in this at this time. I haven't got it back yet. We also looked at yield and staggering and some other physiology characteristics. Ed Buckler and Sarah Larson have created a population from the NAM inbreds, about 1,500 lines with a reduced window for flowering, and he created test crosses with PHZ51 and XPVP. So we've piggybacked on his research, and he's allowed us to look at staggering within those populations, and we've been doing joint QTL mapping in those populations, and we have some significant loci or some QTL and that are not associated with flowering, so that's promising. We also plan on announcing heterozygous inbred families to get near isogenic lines and see the effect of each individual QTL. As well, in the B73 population, we'll also be looking. The nice thing about having back cross lines is we'll be able to go pretty quickly, I think, and go in to find near isogenic lines that are already back into that population and analyze the individual QTL for their effect of staggering. Of course, future plans way ahead of this is to use marker-assisted selection to move these into more elite inbreds and measure the quantification of staggering with those and how those affect yield. With that, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Mitch Tynstra and some people in our lab. Kartik especially has helped me, our postdoc. I'd also like to thank Travis Lee, the breeder out in Garden City that's been instrumental in doing our phenotyping. Dave Bubeck with helping me set up with Pioneer. Sarah Larson, Ned Buckler at Cornell. The Purdue Genomics Center for all our genotyping. And, of course, the entire Tynstra lab for helping to increase our populations and some of the other phenotyping work. Also have to thank NIFA and AFRI for funding my work, also Pioneer for funding my fellowship, and the Ross Fellowship at Purdue for funding my work also. Thank you. Take any questions.
Hey, we do have time for a question.
We've talked about it. I don't think we've decided yet whether we're going to do it or not, but it's possible.
Another question?
Yeah, we've began to do that. The problem right now is I don't think we have enough individuals in the selective genotyping to really say where those QTL are. But of course, yeah, that'd be the next step to look at some of those syntenic relationships with sorghum and other QTL studies.